Good morning. Have everybody sit down. You know, did I tell the story in Cleveland? I ran a conference once, and I've only been to Jewish conferences and Jewish things like this where everybody says, come on, come on. It's like herding cats, you know, get everybody to sit down. It's impossible, right? Once I went to a non-Jewish special ed conference, and the keynote speaker was starting at 3 o'clock, and at 10 to 3, the hall was completely empty because everybody checked their own watch and went to go sit down so that they'd be ready to hear the keynote speaker. And I couldn't believe it. I never saw anything like it in my life. I was like, nobody had to herd them in at all. So when I ran the Women in Kiruv conference, I asked everybody, could we just like pretend we're Protestants just for these 2 days? I got into big trouble for that. So welcome. It's such a privilege to be here. I was just thinking about, you know, today as I was walking in the Old City and on the bus and the privilege that it is. I don't know if people feel like it when they live in Israel, but it's such a privilege to get on a bus full of Jews, driven by a Jew, and streets filled with Jews in our Jewish state and in our home, and walk down the streets and in the Old City. And even if you're a little nervous, is there an Arab behind you or not? And, you know, glad you have a backpack on your back. But whatever it is, just like just to feel the privilege of being here in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. And so added to all that privilege is my privilege today to teach in the Old City, which is a lifelong dream. It's really an amazing thing to be here. I wasn't asked to tell my story today. That's not what I'm here for, so you're not going to hear any of that. But I do have a website, abiteoftorah.com. You can go on there and hear all kinds of things. But I will tell you, let's see, where should I start? Aliza Bulow is my name. A Bite of Torah. A bite of Torah, yeah. A bite like a cookie, not like a computer. It's a bite. I just have a bite, not the whole thing. But I'll share the bite that I have. So.
Can you tell us your story, just so we know who you are?
Yes. Okay. For that purpose, I will tell you that. I could tell you the Rav Gav version of my story, right? I'll try to do it like him, right? 13th generation American, came in 1634, pilgrims from England to America, raised in the civil rights movement, Protestant background, became atheist at 10, converted at 16, after a little journey, found Judaism at 14, became Jewish at 16, came to Israel at 16 and a half, studied in Brabenders for 2 years, served in the army for 2 years. Nachal, back in the day when settlers were good things and settlements were a government project, so I invested in the land, building this land. It's interesting because and the first day I was with my Garin in the army in the Golan. We were in the Ramat Golan. And here I am, this girl, you know, my Hebrew is medium, definitely medium at that time. And I'm with all Israeli girls, a religious Garin. And we're driving from the Moshav Yonatan down to Tveria for whatever, and it starts to rain. And they're saying, the rains of blessing coming for the land of Israel, it's so good for the Kinneret. And I thought, oh, I'm with such a Zionistic group, it's great. Like they love the bracha of the rains in Israel. It's like, how great is it to be in this army group? And then I find out if it rains at night, you don't have to work the next day. So I worked in the apple orchards, worked in the avocado orchards, clearing the irrigation lines and picking avocados, and then cooking in the kitchen, serving in the army, and wearing my uniform, and setting up a settlement in the Bikat Eridein, and building the land. And I was very clear, I was always going to only marry Israeli, live here forever, right? And of course, I married an American lawyer, and so that's where I live now. So it's so Hashem, right? The Hashem like runs the world. I live in Denver, Colorado. And I'm here for a week. I work for Ner La'Elef. Ner La'Elef is a leadership training institute based here in Israel that trains young couples concurrent with and post-smicha to train them in kiruv and outreach and education and send them out all around the world to give to the Jewish people. So my job is to follow up with the women of the couple in North America. So I'm the North American Rebbetzin's Rebbetzin, the kiruv Rebbetzin's. And Chaya Levine was here yesterday. She's my boss. Yeah, she's my boss. Yeah. Right, so I came now to visit with her. Usually I come once a year for Ner La'Elef for staff meetings and things like that. But I came really for Chizuk for Chaya this time. I'll come again in May, Bezrat Hashem, so we'll have our staff meetings then. But I want to be here now.
Are you the one who she mentioned did the shidduch, made the shidduch for her son?
No. No, I did not make the shidduch for her son. No, I made shidduchim for my own kids, but not for hers. Ner La'Elef, sure. It's actually really nice to have a board. Ner La'Elef. And it's it's from a pasuk, and I haven't looked up the pasuk. But it's light to 1,000. So it really is about, it's a Wolfson Horn funded organization that really is about shining out light to 1,000 that people are trained here in Yerushalayim and then send out. And they have 5 different training programs in Russian, Hebrew, French, English, and Spanish. So I follow up with the women in North America. And I actually got to go to Australia this summer also because one of my North American couples moved to Australia. And Melbourne and Sydney, yeah. Yeah. That was pretty exciting. Okay, so with all that, today we're going to talk about manifesting majesty. So you heard a little bit about Malchut, and I'm actually excited to be here for this last day to bring it all together. So I'm sure you've all discussed the Sefirot, and you know what the Sefirot chart looks like. Is that the case, right? So I just want to do a little bit of a review and add into that. So we basically have, you know what it looks like, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's familiar with that?
Yeah.
Great. So
somebody did it.
Okay. Okay. This is the classic structure of the 7 Sefirot. So let me just say, just to finish off that quick biography that I gave you. I got married, had my flurry of children in Long Beach, Long Island. I was interested to hear that Rav Gap went to Halb. My kids did not go to Halb. They went to Tapenu and South Shore. So I charedified through Tehillah Yeager's bungalow colonies, Shar Yashuv, and then moved from Long Beach, Long Island out to Denver, Colorado, and continued learning the entire time. I love to learn. I love to share. I teach adults. I only like to teach adults. Kids are... And I'm so glad mine are grown. I love kids, for sure, but not to teach them. I only want to teach people who want to be in my classes, and so I love teaching adults. Right, that's right. Yeah, I was trying to place you also. Yeah, that's right. So Tehillah Yeager is one of my principal teachers, certainly growing up and my foundation and forming me and shaping me. Okay, so now I live in Denver. I teach Torah in Denver, and I teach adults how to teach adults also. That's what I do. But I love to learn. Okay, so here are the Sefirot, and this is what they are. Basically, it's Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet. So loving kindness, strength, and balance, right, or splendor. And then we have Netzach and Hod, eternity and splendor, whatever that means.
Can you write it in? Yeah,
you write it in. Someone did one quick one. Nobody ever.
Okay, no problem. Can I write in Hebrew or you want in English?
English.
I should just make it bigger. Yeah, let me make it bigger. Yeah, there's an eraser. It doesn't work very well. Now, there's no point in erasing this. I just wanted to make it bigger. Is that good enough?
Yeah,
okay. Chesed. Gevura. Tiferet. Netzach. Hod, Yesod, Malchut. Okay. These are the 7 Sefirot. These 7, we have 2 different constructs. We have 10 Sefirot, and so there's 3 on the top, which could either be Keter, Chachma Bina, or Chachma Bina and Dat. The Chachma Bina and Dat is Chabad. For anybody who doesn't know what Chabad stands for, it's Chachma, Bina, and Dat. And those are the 3 above. And those are the, and we often separate these 3. So Keter is instead of Dat. So you can do the top 3. So we're not going to talk about those. I'm just telling you. That's just like a little piece of information filed away for literacy.
With the Chachma Bina Dat or Keter.
Or Keter Chachma Bina. So it either goes, it's either shaped Keter Chachma Bina or Chachma Bina Dat, depending on how you shape it, depending on where you call it. So Keter being Hashem's crown. But these lower 7 are the one that we talk about the most often. These 7 are related to the days of the week. They're related to the letters, which we'll talk about. And the 7 Sefirot are, we consider, these are the 7 Sefirot through which Hashem created the world. It is an allusion to, and...
What is the word sphere? How would you best use that word?
I would say in the English word sphere. So environment, encompassing. So I was just going to say that one of the reasons that the Kala walks around her chasen under the chuppah is because the woman has been invested with the capability of creating the environment of her home. So she is given by God the power to exercise these seven sphirot in creating her world. It is through these seven sphirot that the world was created. So when she walks around her chasen seven times, each one is one of these sphirot, as she has been given the gift of taking on the creating of the environment of the world of that family. So that's one of the things that she's doing. It's also, who's in here? Let me just see. Okay. It's also a marital illusion, let's just say. Ishto kebeto, he lives inside of her. So as she walks around him, he's inside of her energy. So there is that illusion. I'm just trying to see like who's in the room, right?
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. Right? You, the unmarried people, don't mind if I talk a little bit about sex? Is that okay? Just take permission from them.
I always wanted to take it there.
Okay, good. Okay, it's a sexual illusion, all right? So he's living inside of her, and that's the seven sphirot. She's creating the environment that he lives inside. We talk about ishto keveto. His wife is like his home. Right, so his wife is his home. The house is the house, but the wife is the home, and he lives inside of her. So it's not just the physical, he enters her to live in her, but her energy is what he lives inside of. And she begins creating that energy here when she walks around him under the chuppah, which represents the home that's open on all sides. Her walking around him starts the process of she's been invested with the creator of environments, right? So it says, I think in Yirmiyahu, "Va'ani choma," I'm the wall, right? Right. So the wall. Shir Shirim, thank you. So I'm the wall. So she's creating the wall around him. So on the one hand, we have the wall that we're creating. Oh, in Yirmiyahu, it's Ve'isha Tesovev Gever, right? Ve'isha Tesovev Nekeva Tesovev Gever, right? So the pasuk that the feminine surrounds the masculine. And that is a that verse.
Can you just say that one more
again? That Nekeva Tesovev Gever. Nekeva Tesovev Gever. Right, that the feminine surrounds the masculine, and so that is that is about marriage, but it's also an allusion to the future, when there will be a rise in the feminine energy. There's a diminution of the feminine energy, right? So, when the world was first created, Adam and Chava were created exactly 100% co-equal, and then there was a diminution of the feminine energy. And the feminine energy is reduced in its power, but there's a whole Gemara, which this is not our topic for today, so I did not bring this Gemara. There's a whole Midrash quoted in the Gemara about how the moon lost its light and it was reduced in its energy, and it will rise again. It will be restored in the end of days. And we're seeing that now. Anybody who wants to read The Moon's Lost Light by Deborah Heschelis, Deborah Fasteg, and her pen name is The Moon's Lost Light, or it's either The Moon's Lost Light or The Lost Light of the Moon by Devorah Heschelis. Her husband's name is Heshi. It's a pen name. Heschelis. It's Devorah Fasteg. Heschelis. It's either The Moon's Lost Light, I think it's The Moon's Lost Light, or The Lost Light of the Moon. It's a short book, about 90 pages with a lot of sources, but it really talks about the diminution of the feminine energy and its ultimate restoration, and how we're seeing that in current times, the rise of the feminine energy, likrat the end of days, which is occurring now. I mean, we're moving towards Mashiach, and in this time, the balance of the energies has to rise, and whether it can come from kochot tatuma or kochot tatahara, from positive forces or negative forces being, let's say, the rise of feminism, where it's tapping into an energy, there is supposed to be a restoration of the feminine energy, but maybe it's coming from negative places, where it has to come from a positive source in order to bring the correct balance in masculine and feminine energies, etc. Anyway, so here we have some of these things. This is also shaped like bodies. There's so much in this shape, and that's why I drew it this way for you to see. We're not going to go into all of it, but what I do want to focus on is just this bottom aspect. So who here is familiar with Rabbi Akiva Tatz's Torah, which is really Rabbi Moshe Shapiro's Torah, which is really Kabbalah, right? On the masculine and feminine energies, the giving, the receiving, the manifestation. No? Okay. Yes, you are. Great. Excellent. But not enough, so I will review that just a little bit. World Mask, Living Inspired, Akiva Tatz, read the books. Okay. So this side is the feminine side, and this side is the masculine side. Gevurah is considered, I'm sorry, I'm dyslexic. It's this way. Gevurah is feminine. Chesed is masculine, believe it or not. Okay. The flow of chesed is a masculine flow. And gvura is feminine, cutting off. It's a severity. This side is considered severities Kabbalistically, and these are the flows, and this is the cutting off. So it's interesting that you would think it's feminine to have the chesed and masculine to have the gvura, and it's actually the exact opposite. Feminine is about cutting in order for it to grow properly. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example of the cutting for growth. Let's just say, who has any kids in college? Anybody? Right. Kids in college. So what's their job? Since they're born until they start college, you've been telling them every single day, you're fabulous, you're terrific, and you can do anything you want, right? Anything. Then they get to college and they're so excited and they take all these classes, and then after a year they have to pick a major, right? And it's so hard, because in order to pick a major or in order to pick a spouse, you have to say only that one, which means not any of that. You have to sacrifice width, breadth, in order to get depth. So that is the cutting. You must cut in order to achieve results. You can't stay with breadth. You can't keep doing surveys of courses and get the depth that you need in order to create a real understanding of a subject. If you're going to major in something, you have to say, it's going to be music and it's not going to be dance. And it's going to be music and it's not going to be science. It's going to be science and it's not going to be art. Whatever it is, you have to pick something to get the depth that you want to get. But in order to pick that, and why it's so hard, and for relationships too, is you have to say, it's not going to be anyone else. It's going to be that person and that person only.
But men do that too.
It's a feminine energy. Mm-hmm. All people have masculine and feminine qualities.
Right.
Just in most women, the feminine is dominant, and in most men, the masculine is dominant. Mm-hmm. Not in all. But I'm just saying that's a feminine quality. That's not women. That's a feminine quality.
That we tell them to stop?
No. That we have this concept of pruning in order to make things grow well.
Oh, okay.
The concept of cutting off in order to make it grow well. So I'll just give you an example. Rain, let's say rain, gishmei bracha, right? It's a chesed, right? A lot of rain, a klala, right? It's a curse to have a lot of rain. It's too much. Not enough rain, not a bracha, right? You need just the right amount. So you need flow, and cut at the right time in order to get the balance, the tiferet, of a perfect, beautiful land where there's not flooding and there's not drought. You need just the right amount. So you need flow, but you need to cut also at the right time. So the flow is the masculine and the cutting is the feminine in this case.
Even emuna, which, you know, Tilo said, but it's feminine, gvura is the also the hay, which is the mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean it's female, it's more.
Right, no, it doesn't mean it's female, it means, okay, so now let's talk about masculine, feminine energies in this construct, because we want to talk about this, this is what I want to talk about today, is the manifestation, okay? So the masculine energy in general, and this is why we refer to God in the masculine, and again, all people have masculine and feminine, and God is neither masculine nor feminine. Nevertheless, we refer to God in the masculine in general because of this quality, which overridingly is a masculine quality, and that is the quality of giving. The quality of femininity is the quality of receiving and transforming. So how do we see that? We see that very easily in baby, right? Man gives seed. I told my husband once, thanks for your one cell contribution, uh-huh. Right? Which he always reminds me of, right? So man gives, it's very quick, it's very easy, right? Woman receives, takes a long time. It's pretty quick to receive, but then for a pregnancy, it's a long, protracted development. So in order to manifest the gift, it takes a long time and discomfort. But when the baby is born, it's neither masculine nor feminine energy. Of course, we hope that it's one or the other. but that baby is transcendent. It's neither the gift of the man nor the work of the woman, but it's something that transcends both and couldn't happen without both. Right? So we have masculine, feminine transcendence as a pattern. Right? So for instance, with rain, geshem, masculine, adama, earth, flowers, transcendence. Right, so we have giving, receiving, protracted work, and then transcendence. Right? Does that make sense so far? Is the concept masculine, feminine, transcendence. So masculine, feminine, transcendence, masculine, feminine, transcendence, transcendence, ultimate transcendence. Okay. Okay, so what we're not gonna go deeply, and there's so much to go deeply, but I want to focus on Yesod and Malchut. Okay. Each one of these has one of the seven shepherds of Israel associated with them. Those seven shepherds of Israel are our Ushpizin, and our forefathers, right? So it's Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe.
Who's Tiferet?
Tiferet is Yaakov. So Abraham Ish Chesed. And that's why he was his test. It's interesting, the Akedat Yitzhak, whose test is that?
Abraham's,
not Yitzhak's, right? Yitzhak's all Gvura. He understands boundaries and borders so clearly that it's not his test. It's not a problem for him to be bound down the altar. It's not even considered his test. It's Abraham's test because Abraham's Ish Chesed. He's the giver. How could he possibly do that to Yitzhak if that's his test, but not Yitzhak's test? So Abraham Ish Chesed, Yitzhak is Gvura. The balance of the two is Yaakov. He's the Ishtam, the perfect of the forefathers, right? He's Tiferet. Then we have Moshe, who's Netzach. Netzach means eternity. He gave us the Torah. That's the eternal document. Then we have Hod, which is splendor. That's Aaron HaKohen and his Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. He's the splendor, so we see the shine through that. Then we have Yesod. Yesod is foundation, and that's Yosef. Yosef is the only one with the last name of Hatzadik. That's right. We have Abraham Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron HaKohen, Yosef Hatzadik, right? Why is he Hatzadik? Everybody else is Tzadikim too. He's the only one called Hatzadik, and that's because he's able to, the foundation of all spiritual growth and development is the ability to control your sexual energy. That's what it is Yesod. He's the foundation of it all. He's the only man in the whole Torah that is described as beautiful. So he knows he's beautiful. Right? He looks and he sees his reflection. He is beautiful. And he's 17. 17 is like the height of hormones, right? So he's a beautiful young man, age 17, Mrs. Potiphar's all over him. And he's able to say no, right? That is Yesod, the foundation of it all, is that ability to control that. Even at the height of hormones, super beautiful, everybody gone. You can learn more about it, sir, but that's Yesod. And then Malchut is David HaMelech, right? So King David. What would you say is a principal difference between David's kingship and the kingships that you see on earth today or in history that you know about?
David was connected to God. He's humble. And he was just his representative here.
Right. Just, yeah, humility for sure, that he's a representative. Of course, our kings had to always carry a Sefer Torah with them wherever they went because we're the ones who really introduced the concept of King of Kings, right? So the Magna Carta introduced that concept into Europe, that there is such a thing of King of Kings. But this was one of the political problems that was a problem with Christianity and a problem with Judaism altogether, is that, I mean, I'm saying politically a problem. If somebody says there's somebody in charge of you, Paro, you're not the King of Kings. There's somebody on top of you. Caesar, you're not the King of Kings. There's somebody on top of you, right? Whoever you are, there's somebody on top of you. So that was a very difficult concept, that you don't get to make all the rules. There's somebody who rules you. So King of Kings is a Jewish concept brought then through Christianity to Europe through the Magna Carta, but we introduced it. So we have this concept that the king, although divinely appointed, is not divine, right? The king's job is to manifest majesty. That's the name of today's class, Manifesting Majesty, because we're talking about Malchut. How do we manifest that?
Could you just say, you said that the reason we do God in the masculine is because why he wants
God is
to
the giver.
Okay.
God is the giver, and Klal Yisrael, thank you very much, Klal Yisrael is referred to collectively all men and all women in the feminine. So we are in the feminine. So let's just say airplanes, right? Some people say if God wanted man to fly, he would have given him wings, or he would have given him brains and aluminum in the ground, right? And that's what he did. He gives, we receive, and transform. So with our brain capability, we can dig in the ground and take out aluminum, make computer chips, and figure out how to put a plane in the sky. And God did mean for us to fly, because he gave us the ability to receive and transform. So the feminine quality is receive and transform, make it manifest. In this case, the airplane would be
right.
Transcendent.
No, but I'm saying, oh, it's just each individual thing. It's not total
each thing. No, each thing. So we will talk about that. We're going to get to that. Good. Excellent question.
Ultimately, the finished product.
Yeah, so there's a transcendence. Okay, so let's now talk about, okay, so we'll talk about Yisoso. I want to do one more thing here, and then we're going to talk about the four-letter name of Hashem. Awesome. So we have this. Okay, so now here, each one, of course, is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Right? Shabbos is the feminine. Eshet Chayil. So Malchut is feminine. And when we talk about Shabbos in the feminine, Shabbatot, it's not Shabbosim, by the way, it is Shabbatot. You could say Shabbosos if you want to. But it's a feminine day. And that's because you're manifesting. Right? All the days of the week spill through the day, the sixth day, through the Vav. All the energy goes through the Vav into manifesting on Shabbos. So that's one reason why we braid six in our challahs. One is to make two, since we have two breads. Lechem apanim, right? So we have 12 altogether. That's an allusion to the lechem apanim because there were 12 loaves. And another reason that we braid six is because 6 days of the week braided together manifests as one Shabbos.
Nice. Wait, you said the ultimate manifestations, though, are the transcendence, are not one or the other, they're the combination. So why is Shabbat so feminine?
Shabbos is because it's a receiver.
This is combination, and this is how it's written. This is not necessarily combination.
This is feminine. You're right. This is the feminine side. This is the masculine side. But here, this is the feminine domain.
Okay. Good. I'm happy with it.
Okay. Good. Because it's a receiver. Okay. Let's talk about the Yesod for just a minute, right? So the sixth Sphera, each one of these is also related to a letter, right? So the letter of six is Vav, okay? So Vav, everybody knows what it looks like, but I'll write it for you, right? A Vav, okay? Vav means and, right? The actual word Vav is a hook, right? Something that attaches, right? And then and as a word, it connects. So it's a connecting letter. The energy of Vav is the energy of connecting two things together, this and that. And it also is shaped like a man can be shaped, right? So it's shaped like that because it's through this that all the seed of life flows into the feminine domain. So past generations flow through the Vav of the man that connects the man and the woman. The Vav of the man is man and woman together. There's that connection. And then through the Vav, through the Yesod, through the foundation of it all, is passed the energy of the previous generations into the next generation. Does that make sense so far? Yeah?
Which is the Vav of the word Yesod?
No, the Vav, the shape.
Of the six.
Think about the shape and think about a man.
I got it. But okay. I'm saying the six that to get to the Vav altogether, it's the Vav of six.
It's the
zeros.
Six. Yes, yeah, six.
Not
zeros.
The Vav in the middle of the word Yesod.
Well, it's kind of, right. No, not the Vav in the middle of the word Yesod. Correct. It is the Vav, the concept of Vav.
Right.
We're talking about Vavness right now. Right. Vav, the number six. Vav, the and. Vav, the hook. Vav, the connector. So through that, and it's related to Yesod, which is about sexual energy, so it is the flow there. That's what I'm saying. Yesod is the sexual energy, Vav is six, and it all flows through the six into the feminine domain of Malchut, which is the receiver of the whole thing. Okay?
Got it.
Now with that, let's talk about Shem Hashem a little bit, just to deepen this concept of masculine, feminine, and how that works. Okay, so we have the Yod. Of course, you know that these poofs are hays, right? That's the Shem Hashem, okay? So we have a Yud and a Hay and a Vav and a Hay. That's the Shem Hashem. Okay? We have this concept. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Kiva Ka Tzur Olamim. Because with the name Ka, Yud Hay, God created the worlds, right? Worlds. So from that, we have the Kabbalistic understanding that the upper world was created with the letter Yud, and this lower world was created with the letter Hay. How do you pronounce the letter Hay?
Could you just say the pasuk again? Because everybody's been using it and never said it. Kiva.
Ka. Kiva ya tzur olamim. It's in Tehillim and I don't know where. Ya. Yod hey.
Yeah.
Tzur olamim. Created the worlds. Tzur olamim. Created.
It's in Tehillim.
Yeah, it's in Tehillim.
So that's the basis.
And the whole thing means what?
Because with the Yod, with the Shem Hashem Ka, the worlds were created, really. Okay, that's what it is. We understand, right? Let me just back up for 1 second. We understand that the world was created through the Aleph Beit, right? Does everybody know that? And you know how you know that? From which pasuk? Great. I'm thrilled to be here. It's fabulous. This is terrific. Okay. we know, everybody's seen the inside of a Sefer Torah, and you know there's no vowels and no punctuation, right? So when you write out the pasuk, Breshit bara Elokim et haShamayim ve'et haAretz, right, you have a period at the end of Aretz. In the beginning, Hashem created the heavens and the earth. But you can punctuate anywhere, and you can re-vowelize however you need to in order to get to whatever you need to get to, right? So the way that we understand that the world is created through the letters of the alphabet is this way. Breshit bara Elokim et. In the beginning, Hashem created the Aleph Beit, Aleph to Taf, right? And through that, Shemaim Va'aretz, right? That's how that pasuk goes, right? So from that first pasuk, in the beginning, Hashem created the Aleph Beit, and through that, the heavens and the earth, right? That's how the world was created, was through the actual letters of it. So now we understand, with that understanding, that we have this pasuk in Tehillim that says, through the name of Yud and He, Hashem created the worlds, plural, and so Yud is the upper world, He is the lower world. Yud looks like the seed of life, right? It looks like a little sperm, right? It's got all the, everything you need to manifest later on is right there in the Yud, right? He looks like the birth canal, right? Everything comes out from there. It's made manifest. And the way that you say the letter He is? All it is the exhale, right? Because it doesn't have a vowel. It's just an exhale. And we know that Hashem created the world, bless you, Hashem created the world through speech, right? Through breath. He breathed our neshamas into us. And then he put confines around that to shape that breath into speech. That's what speech is, but breath formed into words, right? So that's how he created the world, was with speech. He used those letters and put them together, sort of like chemistry, the periodic table of elements, right? I have tea in this cup, but really it's H2O that's in this cup, right? Mayim describes what's in it. Water describes what's in it, but H2O actually says what's in it, right? Mayim, if you understand Mayim, also actually says what's in it. You have the Mem and the Mem, the Yod, and that's a whole different thing, but about what water is. But we understand that the actual, in Lashon HaKodesh, not in Hebrew, but in Lashon HaKodesh, that each word actually describes the thing that it is, like H2O actually describes what it is. It's not just a convention of how we call it, right? So that's how the letters are. Okay, so now we have the Yud and the He, and the Vav and the He is the Shem Hashem, which is, it's Hayahoveh V'yeh, right? That's what that name is, all blended together, past, present, and future. Okay, it's blended into this name. But we also have the Yud and the He and the Vav and the He. It's masculine, feminine. Okay, so now we're going to do, we just said, talked a little bit about masculine, feminine transcendence, but now we're going to talk about masculine, feminine, and how that works together as a unit in the Shem Hashem. So before we get there, I'll give you my example first and then tie it back in. Okay, imagine this lovely building. How gorgeous is it? This building is transcendence, okay? It is transcendence, but transcended from what? Somebody, probably Rav Noach Weinberg, Zatzal, sat down one day and said, we need a building for what we're doing, right? That is the gift. That's the inspiration. That's all he had to do. We need a building, okay? That's here. We need a building. Then he sat with donors and said to them, as they received, we need a building, we need a building, we need a building, we need a building, right? And they received it and transformed that into, it needs to be a big building. It needs to be a building with classrooms. It needs to be a base medrash. And it would be so great if it'd be in the old city. It needs to hold our future and our dreams and our ability to educate. It needs to be, it needs to be. They received and received and received, right? Now, that vision, what this building could be, still didn't exist, right? Just a vision. Now they call the contractor, the architect, and all that stuff. And that's really in this too, because they're now they become the Yud, and they call the contractor, and they say, this is what it needs to look like. The architect draws up a plan, okay? Now you have the plan. That's the plan is the hey. That's the received understanding of what the vision is, right? Is now on paper. Okay, so now that's actually in a level of transcendence. It's no longer the idea, and it's no longer the musing. You have something on paper, but you don't have a building. That plan now becomes this, Vav, which becomes, let's see, that plan, right, becomes this, which is now a projector, right? It now projects out. Now that's the gift. That's the causative agent, right? So that architectural plan is this Vav, and here is the actual contractor who orders all the supplies, who hears the plan, sees it, reads it, takes it in, and makes it manifest. We need to hire workers, we need bricks, we need paint, we need faucets, we need floor tiles, we need lighting, right? We need mezuzahs, we need nails, we need blackboards, we need the whole thing. They order the whole thing, and now transcendence is where we are. This is not the idea. We're standing not in the idea, and not in the money, and not in the work, right? And not in the labor of all those people. We're standing in something that transcends it all. It couldn't have existed without the gift and the receiving, and without then it flipping into a causative agent and the deeper receiving, and then the transcendence of the whole thing. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So the baby is the Eishet Torah.
Yep.
I'm stuck on a lot of things. What's the transcendence?
The hay.
Okay. They received the understanding from, people received the understanding from Rav Noach, for instance, that the idea. But then they became givers.
Right.
So
right, that's the buck.
That's the buck.
Right, so that's, you receive the understanding and then you flip. There's a flip into the causative agent. So let's just say the mother, right, she goes to a parenting class.
Right.
Right? So she has the idea, I want healthy, happy adults. That's what I want to raise. My healthy, happy adults are currently going through a stage of childhood. Right? But what I'm raising is healthy, happy adults. How will I get there? I don't know. I have the vision. Now I'm going to go to a parenting class. I'm going to hear. Right? So I'm going to receive. So I become the feminine, with the teacher being the masculine in this case, right? But then I turn around and I become the masculine at home, right? Because I am now projecting and I'm causing that to happen with the kids, really receiving all the wisdom that I got from the teacher, and I'm creating the environment and I'm causing the situation to exist. It takes a long time. The household, the children, the marriage, in this case, all become the feminine because they're receiving what she's projecting. But the transcendence is healthy, happy adults, healthy, happy family, healthy, happy marriage is really the product of it all. It's not just her idea and it's not just her work. Right? It's not just everything she took in, but now you have this thing that exists outside of her idea and the work. It actually is. It actually exists. Okay? Does that make sense?
So the product is the giver, the receiver, and the product.
Correct. 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 Right. Okay. Okay, that being said. So how then, okay, now let's take this back to this last week's parsha. Because we have the coolest thing with the Mishkan and the Aron. Okay, our job, what's our job as Jews in the planet?
Tikkun Olam.
Tikkun Olam. What else?
Light
into the nations. Or Lagoyim. Really, that's our job. Or Lagoyim. Right? In order to be an Or Lagoyim, there's Tikkunim that have to be made. There's all kinds of stuff that has to happen. But really, our job is to shine. Right? We're supposed to be an Or Lagoyim. Where do we get the Or from?
Torah,
right? Everybody has to practice if you're, right? If you are a Baal Tshuva, you probably say Torah, unless you've been around for a while, in which case you say Torah. And I write it out for people, they should say it the right way. T-O-E dot R-A-H, Torah. That's how you pass, right? Torah, not Torah. When you say Torah, everybody, you're labeling yourself, right? It's Torah, right? So, Torah. But it's really because it has or in the middle, right? So there is an or, it's the or ha-Torah is the or that we're supposed to be shining. Where do we keep the Torah? In the Beis HaMikdash. The Kadosh HaKadoshim, right inside a box that's called the?
Aron,
which the root is?
Or.
How cool is that, right? So the root is Or because it holds the Or of the Torah. That's what an Aron is. Now, if you want to hear something very interesting, what else do we call an Aron besides a cabinet? We're living
when
in Israel. But
dies.
When someone dies, right? So what is happening? We put something inside the box, the Aron, that is a light thing that has to be made manifest. We're planting a seed. When we plant a person inside an Aron and put it in the earth, we are planting a seed for Tchiyat HaMetim. It is going to come up later. That's why we do a tahara, because we're getting it ready for the future. It is going to shine in the future, but it's like a tulip bulb. Tulip bulbs teach us about our dead, right? You plant something, it decays, and then up comes something else completely related to what you planted, but absolutely not what you planted, right? A tulip is very different than a bulb, and yet it is the bulb transformed. That's just a way to think about Tchiyat HaMetim. We plant, and we wait, it decays, and then there's going to be a blossom, which is related to but isn't, but is much more beautiful than what we planted, right? So that's that.
So how does Torah have more? So we're not going to be the same as we are.
That's correct.
That's so interesting.
That is correct. We will not. Whole different conversation. We could go there, but we're not going to right now because there's so much else to go.
Torah have more than
that. Okay. Because you hear it, not because you see it. It doesn't have the olive there. Okay. Last night, hang on. There's so much cool stuff here. Okay. How do you spell Herayon?
Hey, Reish,
right?
Is there an Aleph in there? There's not,
no,
right?
No.
Nevertheless, Rav Hirsch likes to put one there. Not to put one there, but I was reading Rav Hirsch this week. So Herayon, he says, is also the or in Herayon. Because what are you doing in Herayon? You're receiving a seed and you're waiting to transform it. It's going to shine later on. And the Aron is like a Herayon. It holds the Or HaTorah, but it can't go anywhere without people. This is the one place where, in a way, Hashem needs us. We can't say Hashem needs anything. And for sure, we talk about there's no king without a nation, and so we're the ones who are empowered to crown Hashem king, although Hashem doesn't need us to do that. But if Hashem wants to be a giver, that's all Hashem wants. It's just, I want to give to you. I want to give, I want to give, I want to give, I want to give. The only way Hashem can give is if we
receive,
right? What if we're so full of ourselves that there's no room for Hashem at all, right? And then we can't receive, and then Hashem is thwarted. He can't give. He can only give if we receive, right? So he gives us the Torah. The Torah is how to become a receiver, how to live a life where you can receive Hashem. That's what the Torah basically is. Right, and it's got do's and don'ts. All the do's are grow your soul this way, enter into Hashem's relationship this way. And all the don'ts are protect yourself that way. Don't do this stuff, it's gonna ruin your relationship. That's basically the whole thing in a nutshell, right? Do grow your soul this way, don't diminish your soul that way. That's what the Torah is. Nevertheless, in the box, what is it? It's really nothing. It's just a seed, right? It has to be made manifest through us. We have to take it and shine it. We have to become the Or L'Goyim. The Torah in a box is just a book in a box, right? It's not until we live it that it becomes the light that enlightens the whole world, that illuminates the entire planet, right? So we have to actually have it planted inside us, right? So first Hashem puts it in the box. That's really Hashem, so we have the Yod of the Torah. And actually, the written Torah is considered masculine, and the oral Torah is considered feminine, which is so confusing since women learn written but not oral, right? Nevertheless, the oral Torah is the receiver and the manifester of the written. You can't keep the written without the oral, right? You have to have both together, and the oral Torah is much bigger in order to explain how do you do the written. So you have the written is the masculine in this case, and the feminine is the oral. What's transcendence then? How we behave. Excellent. Actually, how we do it. And we call how we do it, what is that called? The way you behave according to the Torah is called?
Halacha.
Excellent. It's how you walk it, right? Because here you have these concepts, a book in a box. It's a concept, but it's nothing until you start to walk it in your life. And the way that you walk Torah is halacha. You walk it. And so you have to figure out, how do you do this? How do you make it manifest? Right? So that's what the Torah is. We have the written Torah and the oral Torah. It's put in a box and we live it. That's really what it is. That's how the yud and the hey and the vav and the hey line up together in so many different ways, is we have to live this Torah. Now let me ask you this conundrum. If we know, Beferish, and it's a clear pasuk in an Uncle Moshe song, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere, how are we here? How are we here? Does it make any sense?
We're inside Him.
We're inside Him, right? Excellent. We are inside Hashem, that's true. How are we inside Hashem? If Hashem is truly everywhere, how is Hashem not here?
He moves away a little.
Good. So that's what the Kabbalists ask this question. How are we here? And the Kabbalistic answer is called Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum, tzimtzum, concentration. Hashem scooches himself out of the way. He contracts himself and makes a little space physically for us to exist inside him. We live inside Hashem, right? Hashem scooches himself out of the way for us to live inside him, but not just physically, kiviyachol, not just physically as if he could, as if he's physical and he's not, and it's a very confusing thing, so that's why this is Kabbalah. But it's not just that he gets out of the way physically, but he gets out of the way in terms of his rutzon, in terms of his desire too. Because what do we have? We have free will. And free will doesn't mean we don't have to pay for it, because we do, right? If you eat the cake, you'll pay. So it's free will, but you get to do whatever you want, right? Even if Hashem says don't. You eat a cheeseburger, and you still get energy. Hashem will power you from the calories and the nutrition of that cheeseburger. You open your mouth to speak Lashon Hara, and Hashem will still give you breath, and your vocal cords will still work, right? He gives you the energy to transgress. He absolutely powers you and helps you function whichever direction you choose, even if it's against what he wants. So not only did he scooch himself out of the way for us to have a place to live, he got his will out of the way for us to have the space to make our own decisions. Did you have a question?
No, I was just saying, is that the whole thing that ties into your clear function?
Yes.
Symptom is actually hidden, right?
No, it's contracted.
Contracted, yeah. So he pulls himself
back. Yeah, yeah, pulled himself back. Right, so he pulled his will back also out of the way to make space for us. Right, now, if we're supposed to be in this relationship with Hashem, we should be as Hashem-like as possible in order that we could have a real relationship, right? It's supposed to be a relationship of peers, really. We talk a lot. That's the strongest level of relationship, is a relationship of peers. We talk a lot about top-down relationships with Hashem, king, subject, father, child, master, servant, but the strongest relationship is expressed in Shir HaShirim, and that's lovers, and that's a peer relationship. And what's so strong about that relationship is that it's only as strong as you both choose it to be. It's only as strong as the lowest common denominator, right? Let's just say, you know, there's a great joke. Let's say a co-ed has a crush on her professor, right? Is that a love relationship? It's not. It's a professional relationship as long as he keeps it professional, right? I heard a great joke of the co-ed who goes to her professor and says, "Professor, I'll do anything to get an A on this test." And he said, "Anything?" She says, "Anything." He says, "Anything?" She says, "Anything." He says, "Would you study?" So, anyway, if we understand that our relationship with Hashem is only as strong as the weakest part, and Hashem is the giver, that's the definition of Hashem, is give, 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 a definition of Hashem, give, give, right? That means that the strength of the relationship is 100% dependent on us. We call the shots 100%. However close we want that relationship to be, it's completely up to us. How do we do that? How can we become somebody who manifests Hashem's energy in this world, who manifests the majesty as David HaMelech did, understanding that it's not about him. Being king is not about ruling everything. It's about living in a way that causes the world to run according to Hashem's plan. Right? That's really what Malchut is.
How long
do you feel like you need?
I would really like till 12:15.
I'm not the boss.
I will be done by 12:15 if I can have that long. I could be done by 12:05, but I'd rather be done at 12:15. Okay, good. We want to live in a way that brings about the kingship of David HaMelech. Right, and the kingship of David HaMelech, he did not rule in order to rule. It wasn't about his will. He ruled in order to make Hashem's will manifest. Right, his whole job was to create the environment in which Hashem's will would exist to the best degree possible. And that's our job. Right, our job as Jews is to live on this earth as an example to be a light. A light is something that you see, not something that you hear. It's not our job to preach. It's our job to walk the way that Hashem wants us to walk, to shine Hashem in this world, to be the Aron of the Torah, to be the or shiner in this world, so that people see, wow, that's what a Hashem-filled being looks like? That's what it is? I want that. A marriage like that, a family like that, a community like that, a state like that, skipping Zionism, and we're not going to discuss that, but we are supposed to have a state. That's Torah law. We're supposed to have a state where everybody does what they're supposed to be doing, where we have garbage men and lawyers and a legislature and whatever it is, music teachers, everybody, so that the whole world can look at us and say, wow, that's the Or LaGoyim. We're supposed to do it individually and collectively. Collectively is in our state, right? That's why our state is placed right here at the conjunction of three continents and with a sea on the side, so that in the ancient days, everybody had to physically pass through the land of Israel to get to the rest of the world, so that our light could spread out, our ideas would spread to the whole world through the traffic that comes through us. And today, it's so interesting just to think about the technology that's developed here, and our light is still shining to the whole world. All that technology is shining and shining and shining from here. It's our job, ours in this room, those who understand that we are light shiners, to infuse it all with light and infuse our people with light and infuse our nation with light, so that we all together are shining so brightly. All right, how do we do that? We want to be just like Hashem. Right? What's something that Hashem, we all know Hashem clothes the naked and he takes care of the sick and he buries the dead. We're supposed to do all that stuff. What else does Hashem do? Hashem told us to build the Beit HaMikdash and behave just like him. He said, V'asuli mikdash v'shachanti. Right? Make for me a mikdash and I will live among you. Not in it, among you. Right? So Hashem says, I want to live inside you. Just like you live inside me. I made space inside me for you. Do you think you could make some space inside you for me? Could you get yourself out of the way just a little bit and make a little spot for me inside you? Because I did it for you, and that's what I want, for you to do it for me. But we're not really sure how to do that. So Hashem says, no problem. I'll give you a bunch of mitzvahs. Make me a mikdash. Do that stuff. This is what you do. When you build this, you build this. Right? I always wondered for Pesach, like Pesach where the nation's about to be born, right? And all the avoda for Pesach is cleaning away the chametz. And I've learned from Tehillah Yeager over the years, cleaning away the chametz, that's cleaning away your ego. You're supposed to get it out of your life and this, and it's a mushel for this and that and the other thing, and every little crumb, everybody inflatedness and all that stuff, like get it out of your life. And I'm busy cleaning the house thinking, how am I going to do that avoda of getting it out of my heart also? And I finally realized that's the avoda is sweeping the floor. That's how you get it out of your heart, right? It's not Elul. Elul is when you do the spiritual work where you're sitting and thinking and meditating. That's not the month before Pesach. The month before Pesach, it's so interesting to think about. You know, we have these opposite ways of preparing for these two new years because, you know, Pesach is a new year. That's when we start counting the months. Nisan is month number one. Preparation for that's all physical. Right? But that's the spiritual year, actually. And Rosh Hashanah in the fall is the when we change the number of the year. But that's really the fall. That's the beginning of the physical year. And for that, we do spiritual preparation. So we have these opposite New Years and opposite ways of preparing for each of them as they spin around the year. Okay, but among that, let's see. There's so much I want to talk about, but let's see. Okay.
So you have to make me a mikdash.
Yes. And I'll live inside you. So that's what we want. Create space for Hashem to live inside us. Let's talk about the Aron for just a minute. The Aron, what does it look like? It's gold, right? Gold on the outside, gold on the inside. And what's in the middle?
Wood.
Why should it be gold on the outside? They didn't have enough money to make it all gold? Really, it's the Mishkan. You know, when they put out the call to build the Mishkan, Moshe said, I need stuff for the Mishkan. Here's the list. And this was the most successful building campaign in the history of the Jewish people. Because after 2 days, he had to say, stop, I have enough. We can't take anything more. We have everything that we need, right? So if we have everything that we need, what, they didn't have enough gold? They stopped people from bringing it. Why isn't it gold through and through? Right? So it's, why? Do you know why? So one reason is they say it would be too heavy to carry. Oh, so you say, oh, you're accepting that. And a lot of people say, oh, I accept that. Except for what?
It carried itself.
It carried itself. Thank you very much. Not only did it carry itself, but it carried those people who were carrying it. How could that be too heavy to carry? And yet that's what it says. It would be too heavy to carry. So what would be too heavy to carry in a solid gold aron that represents our heart, because the Torah is supposed to be here, right? What would be too heavy to carry?
We're not supposed to be. We're supposed to try to be perfect, but we're not supposed to think we are perfect, so the wood is imperfect, and it's a growing thing, and
growing
it's alive.
Thing. And right, so we're supposed to be gold on the outside and gold on the inside. Same on the inside and the outside. We're not supposed to be hypocrites. We're supposed to be same on the inside as the outside, but we know that we can't be pure gold. We have wood in the middle that we're growing. We're still growing beings. It would be too heavy to carry if we had to be perfect through and through. So the idea is be gold on the outside, be gold on the inside, and be growing in the middle. That's who we're supposed to be. That's something that we can carry, right?
That we can.
We can carry that. Because it's about us carrying it. The aron itself is carried by itself, right? We didn't have to worry about that. Okay, I want to do with you a meditation. Okay? I'm going to do it relatively quickly. And so really, you're going to get the structure of the meditation. If you ever want to do this on your own, you're going to be able to do it on your own. This is a meditation I learned from Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, but not directly from him, from a student, because I never met him. But this is an Aryeh Kaplan meditation. And it involves the yud and the hey and the vav and the hey. Again, I'm going to go pretty fast, but bear with me, because I want you to be able to have this, and then you'll be able to work on it later on. Okay, so everybody take a deep breath. Close your eyes. Okay, don't take notes on this. It's being recorded. You'll be able to hear the recording. Okay, so close your eyes and just be present. So feel yourself in your chair right now and feel your feet on the floor. Just come into relationship with your body's contact with the chair that you're in and the floor. You can stand or sit. Most people are sitting, so just have that in mind. And what we're going to do is imagine the four letters of the name of Hashem below your feet. The yud and the hey, and the vav and the hey, going down into the earth. So the yud is directly under your feet, and then comes the hey below that, then comes the vav, and then comes the hey below that, down in the earth underneath your feet. With three breaths, we're going to bring the yud up through our body. Each inhale, partially with the exhale, we'll leave it where it is. So now visualize that yud, take an inhale and bring that yud up to your knees. Just breathe it up to your knees. With your exhale, just let it stay there. The next inhale, bring that yud up into your chest. Visualize the yud inside your chest. And with the exhale, just let it stay there. And with the next inhale, bring it out through your head so that you see that yud on the top of your head, unattached, just on top, in space. And take a deep breath, just visualizing that yud on top of your head. Now bring your attention to below your feet again and see the hay that's there. We're going to do the same thing with the hay. We'll use three breaths to bring the hay above our heads, moving the yud up to accommodate the hay. So first, take a deep breath and bring, on the inhale, bring the hay up to your knees. And on the exhale, let it just stay there. Inhale again and bring that hay up into your chest. And on the next inhale, bring it up through your head, above your head, moving the yud up to accommodate the hay below it. Take a deep breath with the yud and the hay above your head. Now turn your attention again to below your feet, where the Vav is waiting. And on three breaths, bring that Vav up through your body. First inhalation up to your knees. The next one up to your chest. And now bring it up through your head, moving the yud and the hey above your head. Make space for that vav. And now take your attention down to your feet again. And below you is that hey. And let's bring that hey up. Breath number one up to your knees. Breath number two up into your chest. Breath number three up through the top of your head, moving the other letters above. Now take that bottom hay that's there just above your head and stretch it out wide so that the top of the hay is stretched wide enough that it covers you like an umbrella. And now take the two legs of that hay and bring them all the way down to the ground so that you are now sitting in the sukkah of your hay, that bottom hay of the Shem Hashem. Inside this sukkah is your safe space. Inside this sukkah is where you can connect to Hashem and discuss whatever you want. Whatever you want at any time, but I'm going to still guide you right here. Here we want to access our hearts. And we want to do one piece of tshuva. Our neshamas were created 100% pure, but we've put things on top that have gotten in our way, and it's hard to access that inner glow. So think of one thing that you're sorry about, that you wish you hadn't done. And right now you can do tshuva. I'm sorry, Hashem, that I did this. I wish I hadn't done it. I take upon myself not to do that in the future. Just pick one thing, just a little dusting of your neshama right now. And now access your heart and open it up and say, Hashem, I want you to live in here. You made space for me inside of you, and I want to make some space for you inside of me. Here's a spot. Help me make it bigger, but at least I'm making a start. Inside this spot, let's think about the light that you want to shine. Who you are. How can you shine Hashem's light in this world? You've learned so much on this trip. Think of all the places you've seen and the people that you've met, the things that you've heard. There's probably something on top for you that says, I really want to be doing this to shine. Whether it's smiling more at people or being more gracious or kind or being more careful with my words, taking a little longer to get angry, something where you're going to shine more brightly. Think about that thing and think about the light that shines from there and attach yourself to it. Okay, just because we're going a little bit quickly, we're going to now close up our sukkah. So bring the legs from the floor up to the top, up to the hay. Scooch the legs up. And then collapse the hay above your head so it's the same size now as the other letters on top of you. So now on top of you, this you see the Shem Hashem, the yud and the hay and the vav and the hay. And remember that the upper worlds, the worlds that direct this world, are created with the letter Yud. And this world is the manifestation of the upper worlds. It's the hay created with the breath. And then Hashem gave us instructions in the Torah. That's the directing letter Vav. And inside of us, it manifests. We are the ones who manifest the Torah in this world. That's that bottom letter, Hey. How can we manifest Hashem's majesty in this world? That's who I want to be, is somebody who manifests majesty. And with one breath, each letter, we're going to take those letters on the exhale and send them back down through us. So take an inhale, take that letter, Hey, and send it down. Back into the floor underneath you. And another inhale and see that letter Vav above your head. And on the exhale, send it back down through your body, through your feet, back into the floor. And that letter Hey above you, see it, take an inhale and on the exhale, send it back down through your body into the floor. And now you see that letter Yud above your head. That letter you had, take an inhale, and on the exhale, send it back down through your body. A deep breath, and feel yourself back in your chair. One more deep breath, and open your eyes. Okay, I have one short story to end with. I would love to ask you to share, but I'm already overgoing my time. I just want to tell you quickly one quick short story. So I heard this from a Reform rabbi who was walking out behind his congregants and heard a mother and four-year-old child speaking to each other about the rabbi's sermon. And the four-year-old said, "Right, the rabbi said that God is bigger than all of us." I said, "That's right, honey." "And right, the rabbi said he lives inside each one of us." She said, "That's right." I said, "Well, if God is bigger than us, but he lives inside of us, wouldn't he show through?" So that's how we want to live, in a way that Hashem, who's bigger than us, lives inside of us and shows through. And that's how we can manifest majesty.